Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
What's a story you've always wanted to tell but has never been relevant in any other thread? Story 1. I work in a hot GM factory, and where I worked years ago, we were very close to open windows in the walls. Quite nice when a storm blows cool air through, but not so good when the mosquitoes come in to have a buffet on our bodies. One season they were really nasty and management seemed to not care when we brought it to their attention. A coworker of mine was a very belligerent type. He loved to pick verbal arguments with anyone and truly loved fighting with management. This one night the plant manager comes walking by and I see this coworker call him over to talk to him. I watched from a distance, expecting to see some loud yelling and red faces. Instead it was all pleasant and smiling faces. 5 minutes pass, then 10. Finally, the plant manager shakes his hand and he moves on. Being very confused, I go up to the coworker and ask, "So what did he say when you complained about the mosquitoes?" The coworker said, "Nothing, I never even mention it." I asked him about his wife and his kids and his hobbies. I asked him about anything long enough to where he was getting eaten up by all the mosquitoes. We both smiled, and the next day, a company was outside the plant successfully spraying for mosquitoes. The coworker really was a jerk usually, but that solution was brilliant. Story 2. When my brother was around 5 years old, he did whatever my dad did. My dad's an outdoorsman. He's always fishing and hunting. So my brother got really into that sort of thing. So he ran in the living room one day, exclaiming, "Dad, I found a hunting movie I want to watch." My dad was very supportive of his interests and allowed him to rent it himself from Dish on Demand. It wasn't 5 minutes later when he came back in screaming, "Dad, there's ladies on my TV!" Turns out my bro had rented Cougar Hunters, thinking it was a movie of the outdoorsman sport. Story 3. A couple years ago, my family and I went on vacation to Cedar Point. For those who don't know, Cedar Point is the amusement park with the most roller coasters in the U.S. Some of those roller coasters broke records. The Top Thrill Dragster was, at one point, both the tallest and the fastest roller coaster in the world. We were waiting in line for this ride for at least an hour, and we waited an extra 30 minutes or so to ride in the front row. Me and my brother sat together. After some pre-ride freaking out on my part, the coaster launched us at over 100 miles per hour. I felt a spraying sensation on my face, but assumed it was a cloud of mosquitoes. As the ride slowed down, we could see the people waiting in line. They were looking at us. For some reason, they all had horrified looks on their faces. I mean, asterisk disgusted asterisk. Brother and I looked at each other in confusion, only to find out we were covered in blood. Brother found a feather lodged in his t-shirt. The car had hit an unlucky seagull at over 100 miles per hour, causing it to explode. Its head hit my brother, part of its body landed below the track, and the rest of it landed in the caricature booth. I was still cleaning guts out of my ears the next day. Edit. Magic Mountain actually has more roller coasters than Cedar Point. Now I actually have to go back to L.A. Story 4. One time I was at a fancy brunch at a hotel in Washington, D.C. I went to the ladies' room. Inside, there was a woman standing with her skirt thrown over her head while she worked on hiking her pantyhose up. I hate pantyhose for this reason, so I said, "Oh, geez. Don't you hate it when Jose creeped down?" I heard a muffled laugh as I went into the stall to deal with my own needs. When I walked out, the woman was refreshing her lipstick. I saw her face, then noticed her brooch. I had just had a girlfriend moment with the Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright. There were two large men in suits standing outside the restroom, who I didn't notice on my way in. They escorted her back into the brunch. Story 5. A while back, I was at a theater convention. Most people at this convention were the very outgoing, stereotypical theater kids, while I, on the other hand, was a socially awkward tech kid. While in a lesson, the guy sitting next to me leaned over and introduced himself. The conversation went about like this. Him. "Hi, I'm Mormon." Me. "Hi, I'm Jewish." This was then followed by an awkward silence, and we did not speak the rest of the lesson. Afterwards, I mentioned the encounter to my friend who had been sitting near him. She gave me one of those, "Are you serious?" looks before telling me where I went wrong. Yeah, his name was Morgan. Story 6. My dad passed away this month. My mom couldn't really afford to buy a casket, so my brother, my uncle, Three of my dad's best friends and two neighborhood kids spent 2 days building his casket in my mom's backyard. Edit, wow, you guys, thanks for all your support and your well wishes. My dad was truly an amazing father and an amazing person. Thank you all for the condolences. Other edit, for everyone suggesting I not share this, his death was extremely personal, and we were all there for it. The days before his death were agonizing. The friends and family that he grew around him and came together to help my mom is really a celebration of my dad's life. It's something I'd love to share because if someone else posted it, it's something I'd want to see. Story 7. The Frist story is from when I was 14. I just had my birthday, and as a present, my parents bought me a Ultra Rad. About 2 weeks after my birthday, I was supposed to get on a plane and go to Ohio with my family for a wedding, but the flight was a red eye, so I had all day to do what I wanted. With that knowledge, I went to the brand new housing development in town, walking distance from my house with my longboard, thinking that I'd bomb hills. I rode down a few sissy hills. Then when I was leaving, I decided to attempt the steepest hill there was. I hiked to the top, fastened my brand new helmet, and kicked off, immediately flying down the hill. Not long after, my wheels started to wobble like they were going to fly off of my board, so the genius I was at the time decided that the only way I was going to make it out alive was if I could somehow try and jump off of my board and into someone's yard. I was flying down the hill, flailing my arms, absolutely screaming my head off when I jumped from my board and flew clavicle first into a concrete curb. My left clav essentially blew up, but it didn't stop there. My momentum was still high, so I rolled down the hill a good 50 feet before I came to a stop, during which I managed to get rid of all of the skin within 4 inches of my left elbow. Now this is where the story really gets fun. As it turns out, when I jumped off of my longboard, my feet shot it back up the hill. So, as I'm laying at the bottom of this hill, bleeding all over, out of nowhere, my brand new longboard that I loved up until this point came flying down the hill and smacked me square in the chin. My jaw broke in 3 places and my mouth overfilled with blood. After putting on my new asterisk tie pass away asterisk shirt, I grabbed my board and started to run to my closest friend's house, which luckily was only 3 blocks away. Funny part of this is that when I was 1 block away from my friend's house, some lady in an Escalade saw me, covered her mouth, and waved at me to cross the street. She didn't try to help me or anything. I spent 3 weeks in the hospital, missed the wedding, and underwent 6 weeks of a wired shut jaw and 2 more years of braces. Story 8. When I was 15 and working at a summer camp, I was asked to remove a bench from the lake shore. Asterisk alone, asterisk. It turned out to have 2 concrete blocks on the bottom. I managed to saw off the bottoms of the less and get the blocks into a wheelbarrow. I wheeled it to a dumpster, but that was the easy part. I then had to lift both of these easily 200-pound blocks about 4 feet up to reach the side window of the dumpster. I got the first one in just fine. The second one was heavier, so I rested it on the ledge for a moment. Unfortunately, it slipped and fell in, so I thought no problem, job done. It wasn't until 30 seconds later that I looked down and noticed blood pouring out of my ring finger. It turned out that the concrete that slipped had caught my finger against the edge of the dumpster and quite literally smashed it off at the first knuckle. I walked into the first aid station and said, "I think I need some first aid." Never had I seen the blood drain from someone's face quite that fast. They called the EMT that worked there down from the main building, and he decided to tourniquet my finger, seeing as it was already amputated and I had lost a lot of blood. It really hadn't hurt up until that point, but God oh no did that hurt. He then poured some iodine on a gauze pad and applied it to my finger. My boss was kind enough to drive me to the hospital in his own car rather than wait for my parents. So we're in the car, as he glances over at my finger. "Power Harusegi?" he says. "Where is the rest of your finger?" 15-year-old me in shock responds, "Must be in the dumpster. Cow." He called his second in command, who dove into the dumpster and found it lying adjacent to the second block. At this point, it had been detached for nearly half an hour with no ice. He sped like a demon and got to the hospital only 2 minutes after we did, even though we left about 10 minutes before him. 38 stitches later, my finger was reattached at the tip and they gave me a Percocet prescription and told me not to play the guitar for a couple weeks. That was the worst part of the whole ordeal. I have pictures of it. I'll have to do some digging to find them, though. Story 9. When I finished university, my boyfriend convinced me that we should backpack in Europe for a month before facing the real world of jobs and such. At one point, we were in Edinburgh, on the Royal Mile. He is of Scottish descent, so he decided he wanted to buy a kilt in his family tartan. His family was a smaller one, so naturally the tartan was rare, and the kilt would be more expensive. If I remember correctly, the price was around £350. He was trying to decide if he really wanted to spend that much money, and leaning heavily towards buying the kilt. So I asked him when he would wear the kilt to get that much value out of it. He looked me straight in the eye and said, "I'll wear it when we get married." He did. Asterisk whoops. Wrong word. Story 10. My son was 3 when I got into a heated argument with my wife over water safety one day when we were at the beach. I didn't feel like she was paying attention as much as one should when around the water. I had just arrived from work and saw something I didn't like and said some things in a way I should not have.
Close your eyes and imagine what you'll look like 6 months from now. How's your hair look? The same? Now picture how your hair would look if you started using Hims. If you're picturing the same you as before, but with much thicker and fuller hair, you'd be correct. What can happen in 3 to 6 months? You could pick up a new hobby and get not that good at it yet. You could do about half of your New Year's resolution. You could learn a few songs on the piano or pick up bass guitar. Or you could start seeing thicker, fuller hair regrowth through Hims. Not bad for just 3 to 6 months. Men, if you're starting to notice your hair thinning when you look in the mirror, you're not alone. Life just gets busier and busier, and it can feel like there's not enough time in the day to do something about it. So, try Hims Hair Loss Solutions. You can avoid jumping through a bunch of frustrating hoops and get access to treatment without even leaving your home. Hims provides you with the convenient access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple with doctor-trusted options and clinically proven ingredients, like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. Choose from personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatments to find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online, so there are no uncomfortable doctor visits. Answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to you for free. No insurance is needed, and one low price covers everything from treatments to ongoing care. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers, and they can help you get your confidence back too with visibly thicker and fuller hair. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results may vary based on studies on topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
Just to say, I felt like in peach, both for what I said, how I said it, and because I knew I had not made my point properly. 2 weeks later, I arrived at the beach again after work. My son ran up to me, gave me a hug, and wanted to kick a soccer ball around. A couple minutes later, I heard a sound, and so I turned to look at the water. A mom was swimming into shore from a floating dock, and her 5 or 6-year-old was walking into the water out to meet her mom. Mom was saying, "One minute, I'm coming. Be right there." But the daughter kept walking, past her knees, past her waist. My son kicked the soccer ball, and I remember it rolled right by me, but I was mesmerized by what was going on. "Daddy? Daddy?" I faintly heard. The mother's voice grew more worried. She grew more frantic. She was not a strong, fast swimmer at all, no more so than your average parent, and she was still 100 m or more away. Daughter kept walking in right up to her chest, and then she turned. She knew she was in trouble. Her eyes bulged from her face as she turned around, lips trembling, then silently, without a yelp nor a peep, slipped underwater. Nary a ripple left a mark. By that point, I was already crashing across the field and beach to dive into where I last saw her. I dove in, dove down, and touched nothing. She was gone. I wear contacts because of my exceedingly bad eyesight. I opened my eyes as I dove in, and water blasted my eyes, causing one contact to fly out, and the other just floated around on top of my eye. I could see nothing. I extended my hands all around and felt the faint touch of lake grass on the bottom.
"Or was that hair?"
I grabbed at her head, shoulders, and waist and threw her up onto my shoulder as I struggled fully clothed in a suit, sans jacket, to walk the 4 or 5 steps to shore I knew would be all I needed to break the surface myself. She was fine, albeit a bit scared. I put her down and she didn't even cough. Through the whole episode, she was underwater for less than 20 seconds, I would guess. I looked around and out of the 40 or 50 people around the area, only 2 had taken note of the 250 pounds crazy guy running flat out across the beach, only to dive into the water fully clothed. Not a single person other than myself and the mom saw the girl go under. Story 11. I was 19. I work in a hot GM factory, and where I worked years ago, we were very close to open windows in the walls. Quite nice when a storm blows cool air through, but not so good when the mosquitoes come in to have a buffet on our bodies. One season they were really nasty, and management seemed to not care when we brought it to their attention. A coworker of mine was a very belligerent type. He loved to pick verbal arguments with anyone and truly loved fighting with management. This one night, the plant manager comes walking by and I see this coworker call him over to talk to him. I watched from a distance, expecting to see some loud yelling and red faces. Instead, it was all pleasant and smiling faces. 5 minutes pass, then 10. Finally, the plant manager shakes his hand and he moves on. Being very confused, I go up to the coworker and ask, "So what did he say when you complained about the mosquitoes?" The coworker said, "Nothing. I never even mention it." I asked him about his wife and his kids and his hobbies. I asked him about anything long enough to where he was getting eaten up by all the mosquitoes. We both smiled. And the next day, a company was outside the plant successfully spraying for mosquitoes. The coworker really was a jerk, usually. But that solution was brilliant. Story 12. Shortly after my wife had our first baby, when I was exhausted and high on life all at once, a nurse came into our room to do a hearing test on the baby. She was filling out a form and through a thick accent asked, "How many aunts with Shannon?" Shannon being my last name. I thought for a minute and counted the number of aunts I had. 3 aunts with the last name Shannon, but I have 4 aunts total. My wife tried to get my attention, but I brushed her off as she was still hopped up on the epidural. Then it suddenly dawned on me that obviously she didn't want the number of asterisk my asterisk aunts with that last name, but rather the number of aunts my asterisk baby asterisk had with that name. Oh, sorry. I mean 2. Oh, wait, that's counting my sister-in-law with a different last name. Sorry, I mean 1. 1 aunt with Shannon. But wait, my brother is engaged, so there will be another one in just a month. Okay, sorry, it's 1, but in about a month it will be 2. After about 3 or 4 minutes of me babbling on like this, my wife finally succeeded in getting my attention and said, "All she wanted to know is how many letter N's are in your last name." Thank you, thank you, thank you, kind stranger. I shall enjoy my trip to the /R/lounge. Story 13. When I was around 7 or 8 years old, I would have this really disturbing dream which would repeat night after night. I apologize if it's somewhat hard to follow, but it was a dream after all. Nevertheless, the dream starts out at a playground filled with children. This playground is situated in a meadow about half the size of a football soccer field. Surrounding the meadow is a forest. It looked similar to the forest in the Harry Potter. Despite it being quite sunny in the meadow, the forest appeared to be shrouded in shadow. I remember that while staring into the forest, a deep sense of dread would come over me, and I could almost feel something evil staring back at me. The dream then changes instantly. I am now standing at the top of the stairs in my house. On the ground floor of my house, I can see people running around, but something's wrong. They're screaming and something's chasing them. One by one, the screams fall silent. At this point, I feel incredibly sad for the people who were downstairs. I feel as if I knew them. I then see it. It looks like a woman covered in a black tattered robe. She is slightly translucent and her pitch black eyes are fixed on me. She then starts to slowly ascend the stairs. I would then freeze with fear. Once she got almost close enough to touch me, I would sprint into my parents' bedroom and jump into their bed. This is where the dream would then end, and unusually enough, when I awoke, I would be in my parents' bed. I must clearly have been sleepwalking. Anyway, one night that this dream occurred, instead of immediately running, I swung my fist at this spectral woman. This, however, seemed to have little effect, and I ran as usual. This was the last night that this dream occurred. I remember this dream being terrifying when I was younger, and I like to think that the fact that I retaliated despite it having no effect meant that I faced my fears and refused to give in. Story 14. I moved closer to work about a year ago. I live in a large apartment complex, with the local police force being very attentive to this area because of past issues. I'm a female in my late 20s. I live alone in a building with multiple families because they all have two-bedroom apartments. I chose mine because I wanted a bedroom and an office. People apparently notice this kind of thing. I have two doors to enter. One from my entryway and one from my balcony, which is difficult to get to outside unless you scale my 5-foot storage area. I sleep in my living room for stupid reasons and was awakened by my balcony door being opened one night last December. A man had entered into my home of a month, and L met his gaze with an equally terrified face. He apologized to me and told me he had no ill intentions. He was scared and all he wanted was help. He just had nowhere else to go and work a lot, so it seemed like no one was living in my apartment. He had a job close by but no home. He'd been staying in my apartment when I was not there. He never took or ate anything. I Googled him and found nothing. He just desperately needed help. So I let him live here for 4 months rent-free, and he is now employed and living in an apartment across the street. Story 15. So I live way out in the middle of nowhere in the kind of town where you can just leave your doors unlocked because there's no risks of anything. Like my nearest neighbors are almost a mile away, that far out there. One night, this was probably around 2 in the morning. I was headed to my bedroom, which is up some stairs and then few a couple of rooms and a bathroom. It was really dark, duh. But there was some moonlight, and as I was walking through the bathroom, I faintly saw a man in my room. I started freaking out, but knew it was probably just my imagination, so I kept stepping forward. The guy seemed to notice me and started moving in my direction, too. I was about ready to pee myself, but for some reason kept on going forward, and then I walked into a door. The door to my room has a body-length mirror on it. I have no idea why my parents closed it, but God damn it. Story 16. This is a story from when I was really young, maybe 3 or 4. Anyways, I was in the bathroom with my mom while she was taking a bath, and I asked her why she had hair down there. She told me that when you get older, you'll get hair in all different places on your body. A week or so later, my dad was explaining to me that I had to stop taking my Barbie dolls into the bathtub with me because their hair was clogging the drain. I guess I looked at him and shook my head and said, "That's not Barbie's hair, Daddy. That's Mommy's hair from down there." My dad, the socially awkward panda that he is, was stunned and just walked away. Story 17. So in sophomore year, I moved to Pennsylvania and made friends with the weird, quiet kid. Now this kid's mom was the most cliched germaphobe you could find. Just some of the rules she had was no shoes in the house. She had plastic on every piece of furniture. She would stand there and make sure we washed our hands every time we entered the kitchen. No one allowed over if they are feeling sick, and the list goes on. So one day I'm feeling horrible as we're leaving school, and I asked if I could use his bathroom. We get there, and I immediately run upstairs to his bathroom and let loose. It was one of those that had a fat log at the beginning, and the rest was pure Hershey squirts. I didn't think it would flush, but all went better than expected as it slowly sucked down. I walked down the hall and started watching some MXC. After about 20 minutes, we see turning darker where the door is, so we felt it and it was wet. I opened the door and took a step out **/**, so I looked down and OH cow, literally. The entire hallway was covered in an inch of murky brown water, and it was pouring down the stairs. Now this was a super old, 100-year-old farmhouse, so it turns out the pipe had finally broke and my monster cow was what did it in. Brown water is literally bellowing out of the toilet like you see in the movies. We rushed downstairs, splashing every step of the way as he frantically called to his mom. His mom ran into the room as we got to the bottom, and I will never forget the look of pure terror on that poor woman's face. At that moment, we all notice a stream of water trickling off the center light bulb of the chandelier above us. She screams, "Oh no, grab the oh no towel." So I ran as fast as I could and grabbed the first towels I saw. I instantly threw them in the murky puddle as she screams the loudest old lady assault roar, "Not my good towels!" I look down, and these bleach white towels with crazy flower cow sewn on them are now drenched in brown cow water. Then she runs upstairs to turn off the water and slips turning the corner. She was a heavier set woman, so she hit hard, and me and my friend just stood there frozen, not knowing WTF to do. She's struggling getting up, so she screams, "Help me!" As I get up there, I see that gnarly log laying tin the middle of the hall. It was pretty hard to lift her, so by the time she got up, she was almost completely wet, in my cow water. She finally turned off the water, then proceeded to put on a glove and pick up my infamous log, gagging the whole time. We headed back downstairs, and by that time, a bucket we put under the chandelier was halfway full and still going. We looked over, and it was literally dripping, oozing down the walls, and the wallpaper was peeling off. It was like a movie, but way more intense because of how this lady was. I needed to get the hell out, and for some stupid reason, the only thing my brain could muster was thank you as I walked out the door. Why in the fudge would I say that?
We are no longer friends.
TLDR, I accidentally cow on a germaphobe's house. Story 18. A few years back, my friends and I were drinking and smoking and decided to walk to the lakefront, Chicago, around 4:30 or 5 a.m. When we get to the lake, it is foggy. We can barely see anything. Then out of the fog, we see this figure approaching us. We stand still in silence. This man, whom we all thought was going to ask us for money, tells us he is an Apache Indian and asks us to take part in a prayer.
We obliged. We pray with him.
It involved a dance that none of us could believe we got right. He then thanked us for praying with him and wandered back into the fog. It was one of the most spiritual moments of my life. The fog lifted after he left. Edit. This happened the summer of 2008 after my friends and I were smoking candy on Lake Michigan. Story 19. I was an innocent little girl, loved school and learning, made straight 100 SS, never acted out, but grew up bullied by many. I had few friends and sometimes zero friends. Until I began middle school, I suddenly had 5. I was 13, and I had made a slam book. That's how we used to send text messages, kids, for my 5 friends and myself. Being creative, I made it a little more fancy than the typical spiral notebook covered in doodles and Stussy S's by adding a membership page. Each name had a secret symbol for us to identify ourselves and keep it secret from any student that may find it. After that, color-coded subject dividers for notes, jokes, lyrics, and finally a list for each of the 6 contributors of people we personally hated. I called it a hit list. It was discovered by a teacher the day after the Columbine shooting. The teacher called each person's parents on the hit lists and told them that I wanted to murder their children. I was kicked out of school and subsequently shut down the whole district early 2 months before the end of the school year. Finals, AP tests, and 3 field trips that I know of were canceled. The day after I was removed, most of the other 5 were removed at this point too, an assembly was held explaining to the entire school that I was a threat and to be avoided, but assuring the kids that they had saved everyone's lives. The contents of my locker were ceremoniously thrown away. I'm still pissed about the magnetic poetry I had on my door. That cow was expensive. We ended up in the news, the Secret 6. They did not protect my identity. They protected the other 5, but not me. I was singled out as the ringleader, and the school district tried to have me tried in court as a terrorist. I was forced to be psych evaluated for traits of a serial killer. My teachers wrote their evaluations, citing any unusual behavior such as types too fast, uses gang signs to communicate with friends, that one was sign language, I'm ho, and too organized. When I was deemed not a murderer, they continued to try everything they could to prevent me from ever attending public school in the state again. The final decision was that I could not be identified as a terrorist, but they found one rule that I broke, thanks to a cheeky journalist who gave them the idea, no secret societies. My punishment was 90 hours of community service due by the start of the next school year, 3 months of alternative school, and probation for 1 year, including a 5,000-yard restraining order from all public school systems, with the exception of the one I attended, with an escort. I was escorted to each class and monitored during class by a circulation of teachers, counselors, and police officers. My peers hated me. I received numerous death threats that went ignored. Because of me, they enforced clear and mesh backpacks, metal detectors, visible ID cards at all times, and the removal of our lockers. Because of me and my impeccable timing, I scared the cow out of an entire metroplex. My sinister, murderous symbol in the book, my secret signature, was a butterfly. Story 20. I must have been only 6 years old when this happened. The house where I grew up had a very special wall outside that was covered with spiders and spider webs. Being a kid, I was always testing the limits and bounds of my power, and so when things smaller than me, like Daddy Long Legs, would skitter about, I'd do the sensible thing, grab one, then carefully pluck its legs off one by one, half in curiosity and half in mad power. My comeuppance was soon to arrive. This particular day was a hot one, and what better way to spend a boiling summer's day than to abuse the privileges of a garden hose connected to a seemingly unlimited supply of water? The end of the hose was capped off with a metal pistol that would deliver a blast of liquid on demand. I spent a good portion of the day firing salvos into the air and marveling at the ascent and descent of the transparent, shimmering globs of water.
It was beautiful. What an amazing power I wielded. And then my thoughts turned to the wall. An experiment formed in my mind. Water plus spiders equals sign what? I had to find out for science. It was glorious. There was no feeling to compare. My liquid death ray lanced out at the wall, smashing webs together into a gooey clump of useless snot. Spiders were either crushed by the initial impact or flung aside in a soggy tangle of arms. I was a riot policeman using a repurposed fire hose to abuse peaceful protesters. In that moment, I knew true power. I was a monster. I was a asterisk, God asterisk, unstoppable and uncaring, laying waste to the lives of so many. Why? Because I could, because it was fun, because there were no parents at home to chastise me for wasting so much water. I was the king of my domain, and my domain was my yard, and these spiders were worthless peons. The world wouldn't miss them. I certainly didn't. And then I happened to look to my left shoulder. I have asterisk no asterisk clue how the hell this spider had gotten on my shoulder without me knowing about it. I was a swim trunk warrior, chest bare and glistening with water and sweat. The spider would have had to have navigated the entirety of my body, starting its long journey on my feet, passing the tricky and treacherous zone of my swim trunks, then all the way past the sensitive, doughy flesh of my torso. I don't know how it did it, but it did. I screamed. The assault ended abruptly. The pistol dropped from my hands and hit the soggy grass with a heavy thump. The spider was huge, or at least seemed that way to the 6-year-old me. It was hairy. It was ugly. It had far too many legs to be counted as a friend, and it was there with a message. Though it could not speak, its presence was enough, and the message was clear. You are a king of a void. There are forces in this world your still-developing brain will not even comprehend when you are an adult. You are, in fact, quite small, and any sensation of power is fleeting and illusory. The scream quickly turned into full-blown four-alarm sobbing as I flailed evasively to rid myself of this alien being bearing a dark and nightmarish message. I swatted it away easily enough, but the shock of it twisted a poisonous knife into my very core, and as I fled for the safety of the house, I knew I would never be the same again. Story 21. My family owns a house in North Carolina, a stone's throw from Tuckasegee River. We were on the beach one day, and a family of rafters gets thrown out of their boat upstream. The only one left inside is the 6-year-old kid who is about to float right past me. His family had all made it to the shore, but he didn't have a paddle, and he was getting swept downstream fast. I took my phone and keys out, kicked off my flip-flops, and fully clothed swam after a kid in a boat. Water was about 60 degrees, and it was awful. He kept trying to jump out of the boat, but I had to keep telling him to stay in the boat, and that I would pull him to shore. I just knew, had I been 6, alone in a boat, I would have wanted to jump out too. The kid was wearing a life preserver, but there was no way he would have made it to shore because of the current. I grabbed the bow of the boat and started kicking towards the opposite shore, the one with his family on it. After I beached him, I just turned around and swam back. No thank you needed, just helping a kid. Story 22. When I was in 6th grade, there was this thing where they would take a couple of students out of each class, I think it was called Insights or something, and take them for a few days a week for 2 or so weeks to go learn about something, really immerse them in it. One year I got picked to do it, and it was about the Holocaust. When you are that young, sure you learn stuff, but nothing really sticks. However, this one story sticks with me like it was yesterday. We got lucky enough to talk with a Holocaust survivor one day. He came in and just gave us a first-hand account on what it was like going through the cow he had to go through. So as he was talking to us, he points out the fact that he is drinking out of a coffee mug that has soccer balls on it and says, soccer. He keeps drinking out of it, and at one point he goes, I'm drinking out of this because I love soccer. Want to know why? Soccer saved my life. He proceeds to tell us he was a really young kid during WW2. He was thrown into a concentration camp. I can't remember if any of his parents or family went to the same camp, but he was so young, like 7 or 8. Anyway, every day the kids would get to play soccer in the field in the camp. Every now and again, the ball would accidentally get kicked over the fence, and one of the kids would have to go get it. The Nazi guards would let them as long as they kept their eyes on them. So this one day they are playing, and the ball goes over the fence, and it is his turn to climb under the fence and grab the ball. The soldier tells him to go get it, and as he picks it up, he notices the soldier isn't looking at him. He's looking in the other direction. He didn't know if it was because the soldier was just blanking or trying to help him, but he dropped the ball, turned, and ran into the woods some distance away. He got picked up by a family eventually and survived the Holocaust. To this day, that phrase terminates me. Soccer saved my life. Edit clarity. Story 23. I was in a pizza shop, and when I ordered my food, the guy behind the register pointed at my shirt and said, "You like the USSR?" I had a CCCP shirt on. I said, "No, I just like the design. I actually am trying to join the Navy." I got my food and ate. Before I left the register, guy took out his phone and asked if he could take a picture of me. When I asked why, he said, "You can wear a shirt about a country that once took over my country, I remember that. You can wear that shirt and you are joining the military? I want to show my friends back home how much of a true American you are, and that you have the freedom to do such a thing. Maybe they'll come over here one day, and I don't have to worry about them." Story 24. One time I took a dump that was so long that even when trying to aim it down the hole at the bottom of the toilet, it still stood up out of the water. When I pinched it off, it had to fall one way. It fell forward and scraped across the backside of my ball sack as it fell. Tickled a bit, but was mostly startling more than anything. You don't expect to feel something on the back of your ball sack when you're taking a dump. Thought it could be a spider or something. But then I realized, edit, best name for what happened to me so far that someone has suggested is ringing the bell. Imho, of course. Story 25. Last spring semester, my dorm neighbor got absolutely wasted on his birthday. It's not anything overly surprising, as that happened on basically everyone's birthday. Basically, everyone on my hall knew he was wasted, so we just let him do his thing when it was late, and did our typical messing with him. After a while, though, I went to bed. Keep in mind, this is the top bed of a bunk bed. It was about 4 a.m. when I wake up suddenly. I figured it was just something dumb, and I attempted to go back to sleep. It was at about this moment when I feel my bed shaking a lot. Again, this is on the top bunk, so I figured my roommate was doing some weird sleepwalking cow. I yelled at him to stop, and the feeling kept going. Then I turned to the end of my bed. It was the previously mentioned neighbor of mine, absolutely done. Naturally, I told him to get the fudge out of my bed, which in retrospect was a bad idea, as he could have fallen out and hurt himself. I was tired, though. He then asked for the next 5 minutes. What are we going to do about this? 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 I had to explain to him to just slowly get out of my bed, go into his probably unlocked room, and go to bed on his side. He does this as he slides off my bed and hits half his body on a chair. I followed him as he closed my door behind him. The second the door closed, I opened it again. I look out of my room and he is gone. No noise, no anything. The next day, my roommate and I see one of my empty chocolate milk jugs in my garbage can with residue in there. It was puke. It wasn't a ton of it, like it was emptied, but we realized this guy managed to puke in the small hole of a chocolate milk jug, empty it somewhere at the bathroom across the hall, and then brought it back to put in our garbage can. My freshman year was fun. Story 26. The story about how my friend and I saw our elderly substitute teacher in his underwear during trick or treat. Edit. I guess I will tell the story in case someone cares. My high school student council did this trick or treat for canned goods thing. And even though I wasn't on student council anymore, I went with my friend who was student council vice president. He provided some old family costumes, and he and I went around my neighborhood dressed as a pumpkin with its mouth falling off, me, and a ghost that really looked like a Klansman, my friend. We got around the neighborhood, and right after trick or treat officially ended, we thought, hey, let's hit up old Mr. and Mrs. B. Mrs. B was a third grade teacher that my friend had had and who knew me, and Mr. B was a 70-something frequent substitute teacher in our high school. We thought it'd be a good idea to go see if they had any canned goods since they knew us and surely would give us a lot. We rang the doorbell and Mrs. B answered, incredibly surprised and happy to see us. We told her why we were there and she said, yes. Let me go clean out the pantry. Let me tell Mr. B, you are here. She called down to Mr. B. Guess who's here? Some of the students? He said, send them down to say hi. She told us to go down into the basement to chat with Mr. B while she gathered the canned goods. When we get down there, we immediately notice Mr. B is wearing tube socks, a white t-shirt, and tidy whities. He thinks absolutely nothing of it, hugs us both at the same time, and then goes, pardon my skivvies. He then starts showing us his bowling trophies. Mrs. B comes down to give us the canned goods, drops them on the stairs, and goes, oh my God! Al, and starts apologizing profusely to us, saying, I would never have sent you down if I had known. I am so sorry. While Mr. B is just going, what? What's wrong? We said it was okay. Got our canned goods and left. Once we got past their front yard, we laughed hysterically and decided we probably should not tell the other kids at school. Story 27. I anticipate this will be buried here, but I've been waiting months for a thread of this very nature. So I attended a small private liberal arts college in the Northeast and lived in a development of townhouses on campus my senior year. I lived with 7 other females but happened to live in an all-male block of housing. We were always friendly with our neighbors, but until the end of second semester senior year, I would hardly call us friends. Our neighbors to our right were juniors who all were on the crew team and were in bed by 10, up by 5, and mostly kept to themselves. Our neighbors to the left were all but one African American, a rarity on our notoriously not diverse campus, and very friendly when we saw them. They also had us lovingly refer to them as the Jeffersons. The first week of second semester senior year, I went to my then boyfriend's for the weekend an hour and a half away, as I often did, and returned home late Sunday night to my house. As I was unlocking my door, I felt a presence behind me, and I turned to see Vince, one of the Jeffersons, standing close behind me as if he were coming into my house as well. I smiled and greeted him, apologized for not seeing him there at first, and thought nothing of him following me inside, figuring he must have been hanging out with people in my house and making new friends. I walked into my kitchen where all of my housemates and their boyfriends were expecting a warm greeting after my weekend away, and instead was met with bugged eyes and sideways glances upon seeing Vince trailing me inside. The air was tense and I evacuated the kitchen, confused, to go upstairs and unpack and prepare for bed. In my room, my roommate informed me that while I was gone that Friday night, Vince had shown up around 1 in the morning asking for a lighter. Our housemate had invited him in upstairs to use one where everyone was smoking in her bedroom. Upon entering the room, Vince proceeded to pull out a lighter of his own and a joint, light up and breathe everyone in the room up, but without saying a word, contributing to the conversation or looking anyone in the eye, which was a bit odd to say the least. But everyone figured, hey, free candy. So that night he uncomfortably overstayed his welcome, continued to say nothing, and since then had rung our doorbell upwards of 5 times a day, coming inside, sitting down, putting his headphones in, rolling a joint in a daze, and smoking everyone up without speaking to anyone. By Sunday night, his presence and behavior was making my housemates uneasy. The next day, the doorbell rang at 9 a.m. I peeked outside through our peephole, and it was Vince. I did not answer. It rang again at 11 a.m., 2 p.m., 5, 7, 9, etc. That night, we had a house meeting about keeping the blinds closed and checking the door before we answered it, because although we weren't afraid of Vince or anything, we agreed the behavior was bizarre and his presence unwelcome for the time being. The next day, the ringing continued, and my roommate and I were already fed up with it. Like most college students, we typically had an open-door policy with friends, and feeling like we needed to screen our door so vigilantly was no way to live. Also, his persistence was making us increasingly weary. That evening around 7 p.m., the doorbell rang again, and my roommate and I were the only ones home. It was Vince, and we agreed to answer the door together to more or less confront him. He was obviously on some sort of substance and asked if one of our other housemates, Mandy, was home. We told her she was not. He told us he had something for her. We suggested he just give it to us and we would give it to her for him. It became obvious he had taken a liking to this particular housemate, and after agreeing to give us what he had for her, he returned to our door with a plastic bag appearing to contain a takeout food container and a purple thermos still with the tags on it that had been clearly bought specifically for her. We asked him what was in the bag and he laughed, eyes looking at the ground, and said it was food from a local pizzeria. We assured him we would give the bag to Mandy when she got home. After we shut the door, our curiosity immediately got the better of us. We took the bag to the kitchen and opened it. Inside was about 17 loose bags of Lipton green tea, a Ziploc bag of mixed nuts covered in cinnamon, and a clamshell takeout container. We opened the container to indeed find pizza, celery, carrots, and wings, but they, like the nuts, were covered in cinnamon. Doused in it, we unscrewed the thermos and poured its contents into a glass for further examination and found that it was some sort of mango iced tea, with bits of candy and cinnamon floating in it. Now this was bizarre. We called Mandy and asked where she was, which turned out to be only a few houses over. We stopped by the house to tell everyone about the strange encounter with Vince and the even stranger contents of the plastic bag intended for her. Mandy was high as a kite and not really understanding the full gravity of how unusual this offering was, but our other housemate was. She immediately Facebook messaged one of the other Jeffersons, and as I had her so delicately phrase it, Vince just dropped off some food flipping covered in cinnamon, and we're just not sure how to interpret this gesture. After several minutes of waiting for a response, Reggie replied, "That's funny you should say that because our whole downstairs, The kitchen, the living room, the bathroom is covered in cinnamon. There's honey smeared on the walls, oats in the couch. What the fudge? Okay, so now what was an isolated incident and odd gesture has started to look like a pattern for this dude. We expressed concern to Reggie about Vince's behavior the last few days and called for an inner house meeting at our place. All the Jeffersons but one, Vince, came over, and the following was established. 1. Vince had not slept in nearly 4 days to any of their knowledge, too. He had bought something in the ballpark of $500 worth of candy to start selling, but had instead begun to breathe through all of his supply himself in the last few days. 3. He had acquired an Amazon credit card that he did not seem to understand the full concept behind, because he was going around saying everything was free and had purchased at least 5 iPads online, among other things. 4. He was throwing cinnamon on flipping everything. 5. He had been reading a mystery novel called Cinnamon Kiss lately, and apparently could no longer distinguish between fiction and reality. 6. No one knew where the hell he was, and he had not gone to a single class yet. It began to feel we had a bit of a situation on our hands. The guys were all just aggravated he had trashed the house with a spice. The girls were concerned that after 3 days of no sleep, you are considered intellectually unstable, and this boy on a bender had taken a particular liking to our home at all hours of the day and night. We established that if the guys could get Vince to sleep and keep him away from our house until he did so, that would be ideal. He rang our doorbell again around 2 a.m. that night. We texted the Jeffersons, and through the wall we heard them tell him to more or less leave us alone and clean up all the oh-no cinnamon in their house. A day went by, then 2, then 3, with no visits from Vince, but also no positive sightings of him to speak of. Come to find out, a week later had wound up being institutionalized after a welfare check was filed through our RA, and his erratic behavior was brought to the attention of the administration. He wound up leaving the college and returning to his home on the West Coast without saying a word to his housemates. And he never cleaned up any of the honey or the cinnamon. Turns out the quiet kid that he was decided to kick off second semester senior year with an herbs and spices bender that got entirely out of hand, and ultimately, he went a little cuckoo bananas.
Story 28.
My father and I try to do something different every time we meet up. A few years back, we had exhausted bowling and golf enough, so he suggested swimming. A bit of a mental image here. My father is a 6-feet-something grizzly of a man with the hair of a white-back ape, belly of a sumo, and he can walk in front of a window and get a full tan. This guy is big. He's also a teddy bear-like goofball. We decided to go swimming at the local recreational center, complete with a diving board. People were lined up to dive, and we took place behind them, my father in front of me. When we get up there and it's his turn, he says over the shoulder, "Let the big man empty the pool for y'all," and goes over to the bounce adjustment on the side. When he was my age, the last time he had swam, he was around 110 pounds. Scrawny. Having set the thing to launch a third grader, he proceeded to hop onto the diving board. As he approached the edge of it, he took to prep hops. On the third, he landed on the edge. The board was set so low that instead of bouncing up, he managed to bend it, without breaking, until the tip touched the water. My dad then made a Hugh D. Cass sound and face planted in the pool. The board snaps back, launching water upward, and as the board raised and balanced, eclipsing the sun, I look back in time to see a little girl half my size with the most mystified wide eyes go, "Whoa." Her face was as if she...
Looking to buy your dream home or rent that perfect apartment? With the Redfin app, you'll know the moment your next place hits the market. Set up your gotta-have-it wish list, and Redfin will send you real-time notifications for properties that match. And when you're ready to see it in person, scheduling a tour is just a tap away. Thinking about selling? Redfin can do that too. In fact, Redfin agents close twice as many deals as other agents, so they know how to get the best price for your home. And with a listing fee as low as 1%, Redfin charges half of what others often charge. So you could save big, like really big. Last year, Redfin saved home sellers $118 million. So whether you're buying, renting, or selling, Redfin's ready to help you win. Download the Redfin app and start searching today.
Was seeing Santa flying away in his sleigh. In reality, he was currently drowning in the pool.